Fox Valley Voice.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Rivertown Life. We've been off air for a little while. We're going to talk about that and a bunch of other things today. This is a bonus episode, which means season two will be premiering this summer. But right now, I've gone through a bunch of changes in the last 6 months. I closed my shop in downtown Batavia, Fawn Gifts, and kind of been on a journey. Also did some deep hibernating, and it's now a beautiful day in late April, and I feel like one of those daffodils out there that I've finally blossomed, and I'm ready to be in the world again. Closing the shop was like a really, you know, cool, intense experience. I did a crowdsourcing campaign to close the shop because I lost a lot of money, which was like a crazy, like, I wouldn't say viral is the right word, but mini-scale viral. I would say mini-scale viral for me. I want to talk about that experience because it was really amazing. And then talk about what's next, which includes this podcast and what's next in my life in general. We don't have a guest for this episode because it's a bonus and it's mostly going to be me talking. But we have the wonderful Jaime Gutierrez, who is the producer of this podcast and has his own podcast called The Fox Valley Voice. And he's going to be part of this conversation. He's going to be egging me on, making sure that I'm clear what I'm talking about and all of that. So say hi, Jaime.
Hi, Bri.
Hi.
So good to talk with you again.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy to be back in the Wildwood Tap recording studio.
Yeah. I'm totally with you on the hibernating thing, by the way. I hibernate hard during the winter time.
Yeah. I was just having a conversation with some other friends we met probably this time last year. And so it was our first, it's a couple that it was like our first winter being friends with them. And they're deep hibernators and we're deep hibernators. And I've realized that most people that I've become good friends with in this area are deep hibernators. And there is this like, no, we'll be friends again. Like we'll like really see each other like a lot once it's warm out.
Yeah.
But until then, it's going to be like really not a lot, not mm-hmm. a lot. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep that going.
Right. And I think the key is to make sure that everybody knows it's not that you don't like them anymore. It's just because you're under 17 blankets watching Netflix.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the four agreements. It's, you know, don't take things personally.
Right.
But yeah, getting back, like I took this as a very deep restorative winter because there was just, there was a lot of like healing and regenerating after closing the shop and all of that. So, so the first thing I want to talk about is, I used to have a gift shop. I used to be a small business owner. Opened up a gift shop in downtown Batavia in September, I think. Yes, September 2016. And I carried a bunch of local things by makers. It was very self-care oriented. So a lot of like books, candles, natural bath and body stuff, like touch of vintage plants, cute cards, things like that.
Handmade jewelry.
Handmade jewelry.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we had this upstairs space. It's where season one was mostly recorded of this podcast. We also did workshops and events and things like that. And it was like a truly beautiful experience. And like a lot of like, I was told by many people, like it was loved by the community. Like, I loved doing it. I loved sitting there. There was like a lot of really awesome stuff. It was not sustainable. Which I think is important for a business, both financially and just like the workload of like keeping it going and keeping it good. And there is a point over last summer that it really hit. It was like, oh man, like I'm not coming back from this. Like this was like, I've learned a lot. I've grown a lot, but this isn't something that like I can keep doing both financially and just, you know, as a person. So I announced in the fall that we'd be closing after the holiday season. Also my lease was up and it was a deal with the city that I was going to have to move and like definitely couldn't move. I would have barely been able to coast if that was possible. I definitely wasn't going to be able to move locations. So it was time to like close up shop. Made it through the holiday season and then closed, I think January 13th or something of this year. So one of the things that happened is that when after the holiday season, I was really banking because the holiday season the year before was very, very fruitful. It's a gift shop. It's when people, what, you know, come and buy gifts. My projections were off and I still had a lot of money that I was like banking on making so I could make sure everybody got paid, the government got paid. Not me. I was never getting paid, but like everything else would, you know, was hoping to be like in an even spot. And I wasn't there and I did not know what to do. And Jaime, I was at your house. You were not here. I was watching your cats. And I'd been at my house and my husband was sick. James was sick. And he's like, you know, leveled out on a couch. And I was doing, you know, going through numbers and all of a sudden was like, oh, I'm in a bad place. I don't know what I'm going to do. And this is like over $10,000, like is just nowhere, like no place, no nothing, just burp. And it was snowing really bad out. The Gutierrez family was in Texas. And so I went on a little drive to hang out with some cats. And I poured myself a whiskey. And I sat on your couch and was just like, oh, God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
I'm sorry we weren't here for you at that point.
Well, like, you know.
Or maybe it was you needed a little space to.
Yeah. Yeah. I needed some space. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that that's something that like, as someone like, and I do, like I have anxiety, like to a certain level, I have depression to a certain level. And like sometimes it's always the stupid things that those things get in the way of. It's not the big things. Like if there's a big thing like this, like, it's like there's some sort of survival mode that comes out. And so I was like, okay, well, like I need to get my butt in gear because this is like a big mountain. And like, and also I was, you know, wanting to protect like my husband was like, again, sick on the couch. Like it wasn't the time to like sit down and be like, so I don't know what I'm going to do about this, this thing. So I came over here and, like, you know, as any mid-30s person did, like, I called my parents, like, and it wasn't like a call, like, hey, can you bail me out? Like, because they couldn't, and, like, you know, obviously, like, couldn't, but, they've been business owners. They've failed businesses. And so I was just basically, like, wanting to ask some really specific questions about kind of, like, legally moving forward and what to do. And it was funny because, like, my dad, you know, started giving me advice, and it wasn't the right advice. It was all the advice that I already knew. I was like, Dad, I'm already doing that. Like, that's what I've been doing for, you know, the last 8 months as I'm trying to, like, just barely get by. And he's like, oh, he's like, okay, well, we love you. Like, good luck.
Well, I think the key there, even though they didn't, you didn't particularly get what you were looking for in terms of advice or the right move to make, I think just the fact that you felt like you could reach out to your folks and talk to them about it, I think that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think what keeps us back from a lot of stuff is, like, that deep shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that there is nothing like failing a business and being really public about it that, like, kind of punches you and moves you through some, like, deep shame. Like, and that, like, because, like, that was, like, the next step, is that I had to tell James, and, you know, and that was, like, really scary, like, because, like, also, like, I haven't been making money for a really long time, and I haven't contributed to our, you know, our family, which we don't have kids, like, you know, we have our overhead as a family is, like, you know, not, it's like making sure our dog mm-hmm. and cats have food and making sure that we eat, but it was a big conversation that was gonna have to happen. There's some weird cat noises in the back. That's what that is.
Yeah. My cat Ricky has chosen this exact moment in time to want us to play with him. I might have to go put him in upstairs because he's not gonna stop.
Come on. Come here. I'll pet you if you get close enough. I'm talking. Anyways, to get back to it.
Yes.
So I didn't expect my conversation with, I mean, I didn't know what to expect my conversation with James to be like. It was like the biggest moment of, like, deep shame of, like, I've let our family down. Like, I took all, like, also I got to have all the fun, you know, like, he holds down, like, a 9-to-5 job, and he is also, like, a creative person. He is also, like, has an entrepreneurial spirit. And so, you know, like, the dream was that, like, he was next, like, I was going to get, like, situated in this entrepreneur lifestyle, and then he was going to get to come along and do his own thing. And then this was basically being like, we're not even at square one, we're, like, below square one. Also, like, yes, definitely this is a bigger blow than, like, we as we're at can take ourselves. What do we do? And so I imagined he was going to be really mad. Not that he's like he doesn't really get super mad, but he had every right to be. And, like, I told him, we were sitting in front of our fireplace, and, like, I told him, and he got really quiet. And then he, like, said the most beautiful thing he could have said, is he was just basically like, I'm sorry I didn't support you more on this journey. Like, he basically was like, I could have done this. And I was like, James, like, stop it. But, like, thank you. He's like, also, I don't have $10,000 for you. I was like, I know. And I was like, I have this crazy idea of doing, like, a crowdsourcing to close the business, which I had financed Fawn completely on my own. With one silent investor, that was my sister. But mostly on my own with money that I got from my grandfather when he passed away. And it wasn't a crazy amount of money. It's like way less than like a teacher's salary. You know, like it was enough to like take a kind of crazy risk and like figure it out. So I hadn't crowdsourced in the beginning. I, you know, was just like, this is a crazy idea, but like, let's just, you know, it's my only idea. So like, I think I have to try it. And I had already written out what I was going to say. And I showed it to James, like, cause he edits everything. Cause he's a writer. He's like, don't change a thing. Just put it out there. And so I did. And I basically was like, hey, I used the word dumpster fire, I think. I was like, hey, I opened a business. I'm in a bit of a dumpster fire situation. I'm trying to close, but like I still need, my projections were wrong. I messed up. I still need to make a certain amount of money. I can send you a box of pretty things because I still had a ton of inventory left. I was like, I can bake you something, or I can give you a tarot card reading, because like that's something else that I've been doing on the side for a while. And immediately, and I was like, and you can, you know, I can send you an invoice, or you can pay me on Venmo, which is an app that makes it really easy to just send people money. And it was like, I put it out in the world at like, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning. And all of these people started Venmoing me money, like immediately, and sending me emails with like, I mean, a lot of them were pay it forward. A lot of them were like, send me a box of pretty things. And it was crazy. By the end of the day, like people had sent me like $3,000. Like, that's nuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm sure people have had this experience, but like I had never experienced anything like that. And like the amount of like messages coming in of support, like people calling me brave. I was like, this is not brave. This is just like, this is desperation. But I think it is like, to be honest, and that's what I've come to terms with, is like, to be honest about being in a bad place is taken as bravery, because we all know that feeling of shame and not wanting to admit that we were wrong about something or that we're in a pickle. So,
yeah, I think the natural response for many people when they're faced with shame and embarrassment is to do everything in their power to hide it from everybody else. And so I think that's where people were coming from when they said that you're brave, because they're thinking, if I was her, there's no way that I would be doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think like that was also, I mean, I had been struggling since the March before that, like, and really struggling. Yeah. And so it was like, I was living in that shame for a really long time. And it was bubbling over. Like it finally bubbled over. And, you know, and my thoughts were like way darker. Like, it was like something needs to get out. Also, there was something like really like specific, and like, also, what do you got to lose? Like, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, so I think the reason why it took off like it did, I mean, there are several reasons, but like you said, number one, it was a heartfelt appeal. And also I think it was very obvious that this was not some kind of scam that you're trying to run.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the message was that you were trying to just break even so that you could try something else.
Yeah.
With your life and not be saddled with this terrible debt. And I think a lot of people didn't want to see that for you.
Yeah. No, which was like, I mean, which was amazing. I think there are a couple things. the feeling of isolation is really, I mean, I think it's a really normal feeling. But like even within our own communities, within our own households, like we can still feel isolated. I know that like I've had that feeling. I think it's totally normal to have people reach out that I went to high school with, people that I worked jobs with 10 years ago, like, and not only like throwing me some like bucks, but like also being like, hey, I care about you. I want to see you succeed. Was really powerful. The other thing that I think is very true is people want to help. Given like specific guidelines of how to help is helpful. Like, you know, if you're like, I'm in a really bad place and I don't know what to do, the people that love you around you are like, okay, I don't know what to do. I mean, and you know, some of us are better, like, you know, you make a meal and you bring it over, or like you send them some like positive emojis, or you know, some cute animals or like something like that. But like if you can ask for something very specific, and if someone has it that they can give it to you, like they can.
Yeah, that's a very important point.
Yeah.
You weren't just saying help me. You were saying this is what I need.
Yeah.
I'm in this hole. If there's anything that you feel like you want to do, then great.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah. And like, and by a lot, like, I mean, you know, like between the donations and like the people that like walked into the shop that weekend that I was still open and very much were like, we saw your thing on Facebook. We're going to buy a ridiculous amount of stuff from you. Mm-hmm. Like the Gutierrez family,
I mean, that was the absolute least we could have done. Actually, the least we could have done was nothing.
Yeah.
So we did something.
Yeah, you did something. I mean, and I think like, and this is something else like that I do want to talk about is that like, it is a privilege to be able to have a network like that, that can support you.
But you built that network. You see, that's the thing, is you laid the groundwork with your passion and you were genuinely trying to make something positive happen.
Yes.
In your community. So that's why people kind of latched on to you and this campaign.
Yes.
Is because they know you're not a scam artist. They know that you put your entire heart and soul into this.
Yes.
So that, I think, makes it a lot easier for people to feel good about supporting you.
Totally.
Yeah.
To go, and I agree. Like the reason folks that, I mean, and I would say like 25% came from my network out here. 75% came from my network. People from Chicago, people that I used to do theater with, people that I used to work with, high school friends, college friends, things like that. And like, I've built a network over time. I've latched on to also like a lot of other compassionate people who like are dreamers and are, you know, do want to support and like, you know, do kind of like quilted fabric, like, you know. But I think like what I mean about like privilege is like there is definitely a place that like I am grateful. I'm super grateful. But like also, you know, there is privilege in there. Like there is privilege. But my point is that I think it's important for us to recognize our privilege and to recognize when we have ways to like to kind of like crowdsource or outsource things, or, you know, to get us in a place where we can like rise up. Because and my word for 2018 was abundance, basically, because like I had lived, you know, in a year of like total scarcity and like just, you know, kind of like barely making any ends meet, like, you know, barely anything the entire time. And like I really wanted to focus on what I did have. And I, you know, and honestly, I knew that like it still was probably going to be a year of like not a lot of money, like not a lot of like, you know, spa days or shopping sprees or whatever. Like, you know, maybe 2019 will be that year for me. We'll see. But like, how do I remain grateful? How do I remember like that I do still have a roof over my head and I'm eating well and I am loved and all of that kind of stuff? Like, how do we live in abundance? How do we recognize our privilege even when we do feel like we're lacking, even when we do have like really large bills to pay? So that's kind of what I mean by like privilege. Like, does that make sense?
Are you thinking of people who have no options? Is that kind of what you're thinking of? Like, I mean, because there are plenty of people who, when they get into a spot, they have absolutely no options. And so it's pretty much kind of ruins their life.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think like for real, like, and I think that that's, I mean, we could do a whole episode talking about privilege. And I don't think that that's this episode, but to like break down a little bit more is like, I'm a middle class white woman who lives in the suburbs. That carries a lot of privilege. And also, I was able to call upon a network of people who could give, you know, 20, 50 to 100 bucks to get me out of a spot. Like, there are a lot of people, I mean, even within our community, who don't have that ability, don't have that opportunity. Like, I think everybody has options, and like, there's like, and we all have survival instincts, but some of them get like weirder, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm never gonna be in the situation where I need to sell drugs to support my family. Like, that's not an option. Not that I'm saying that like selling drugs is like an okay thing to do, but if you're looking at your child and you're like, the only way that I'm going to be able to feed this child is to like sell drugs in Chicago or something, like that makes sense. And I mean, and I think like the more we see people's choices as like the possibility that they're doing the best that they can, and then also like find ways to have better choices, like safer choices, because yeah, like I have had so many opportunities and so many ways that like I can screw up and then get back up. And like, that is, yes, I work really hard, but like also like that is because I'm very, very privileged.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting tangent.
Well, and not to belabor the point, but and because I see your notes and I think you probably have a few more topics you'd like to cover, but the people who contributed to you, it's almost like they're voting for you. Like, they know that you are going on to bigger and better things. And so those contributions represents their faith in you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, and that was like, that's a good segue, because there is this point where, cause like, yeah, like a lot of people like paid it forward. And I was like, oh God, how do I pay it forward? Like, do I just like go work in a soup kitchen for the rest of my life? Like, you know, like, and those like kind of crazy thoughts that like, again, you know, kind of take you away from like the big picture and like on like the minute, you know, the kind of like the minutia of it. And like, and I'm trying to respond to everybody really quickly. And like, there are hundreds of people to respond to. And like, also, I'm closing the shop as this is happening. Like, talk about like taking the busiest time in January, which is the coldest and grossest time. And then giving myself like triple the amount of work to do, which was kind of hilarious. But I got this email from a woman that I worked with in 2008. So legit 10 years ago. And she just like put it like super, super well. She's like, hey, like, I know you're going to go do more good things in the world. If I didn't think you were, I wouldn't give you money right now, but I do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, I have proven that, like, I am someone that wants to use my life, use my privilege, use my abilities to make the world better. I have a track record of doing that. Mm-hmm. Owning a business wasn't the best way for me to do that. I figured that out. And I want to move on from that. That's an okay thing to do. And like, and yeah, I mean, the voting for me, like, is a great way to put it. I'm not running for office, though, which is like, I mean, this is another great tie-in. I was listening to a podcast, as I listen to a lot. And I can't remember who it was, but she just wrote a book. We'll put it in the show notes because I want to read it. But it was like an advice for artists right now, living in the world that we're living in. And like, there is so much to do kind of like politically. In my opinion, like, we've got a lot of work to do, both socially, economically, for the environment. And it was a question, like, an artist had been like, should I still be making art, or should I go out and like run for office and like be really politically involved? And this woman was like, it's like, you can be like politically involved, but like, you've got to keep making art. Like, if you're an artist, like, you've got to keep making art no matter what, because A, like, you're going to be crazy. Like, if you're someone that has to output stuff, like, you've just got to keep doing that. And like, there's a difference between art for art's sake versus like art to process what's going on in your mind that someone else might connect with at some point. And I think that's another thing I've learned a lot in the last like year and a half, is that like, I am an artist, and I do, and I kind of looked at Fawn as this like huge art project, which had its like positives and had its drawbacks. But like, how do I use that energy? How do I hold on to the stuff that other people really connected with? But how do I do it in a sustainable way, both for myself and for like moving forward? And does that mean that I continue to be an entrepreneur and continue to start a more sustainable business? Or like, do I get, you know, do I make my money one way, and like, so I can support myself really being a part of like my art moving forward? Like, what does that look like? So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not asking me for the answer, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not. That was a rhetorical question, but like one I needed to take a breath after.
Yeah, yeah.
I am pontificating quite a bit, but I've been, again, like, this is moving on. I've been hibernating for months now. So basically, these are all the conversations that I'm constantly having in my head, because that was another thing, is like, people were constantly asking, like, so what are you going to do now? What are you going to do? And I had no answer for them, like, no real concrete answer, because like, I needed to hibernate.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to take a step back, and I don't think you should feel bad about not having an answer. I think that's just people's natural response.
Oh, totally.
Number one, so sorry that you had to close your shop, probably, right?
Yeah.
And then number two is, what are you going to do now?
Yeah. And like, the last, even through the holiday season, because I did, like, I am one for like writing like vulnerable statements and putting them on the internet. So I did when I was closing, like, I was like, this isn't a sad thing. Like, this is for the best, like, whatever. But, you know, I was just trying to, like, you know, kind of cherry it through, like, just keep going. And people would come in and like, they'd have their sad faces on, and they'd like really like, the last week of the shop, like, it felt like a funeral. Like, people were coming in and like
pay their respects,
which was so touching. Like, I mean, it was like amazing, but like, also like, it broke me. Like, I was just like trying to like, I have to stay in this room, and I would like to not cry, like, so much. But like, one of like, thinking of like symbolism, the shop is like right on the river. And so early January, we had all of these bald eagles. Like, I mean, there were like 5 to 7 of them. And they were also my car was dead. So like it's January, my car is dead. And so I'm walking the like mile to the shop every day. But when I would like leave, like there would be bald eagles in our backyard, like a tree in our backyard. And I'd be walking, like they'd be flying overhead. And then I'd get to the shop and like there's a tree on the river just up from the shop where they would sit. So I could see them out of the window. And then they like swoop by and like I, you know, like I dabble in like spirituality and symbolism and like whether or not like, you know, those are really like my spiritual ancestors or that was just a really good way for me to like be like, okay, I can, I'm gonna keep going like because this is beautiful and like it's a beautiful metaphor to like keep me, you know, keep my head up, keep me like walking through. Like that was really, really cool.
Yeah, not everybody has bald eagle escorts wherever they go.
No. And it was only for a week. Like, but, you know, I was like, thank you. Thank you, guys. Like, you have no idea because, like, this would be really dark otherwise. Like, so it was cold. That was that week. It was, like, negative. I had so many layers on. And my sister was in Hawaii, so, like, I'm on Instagram and, like... And I love her so much that I wasn't jealous. I was just like, oh, man, like, why do I live in the Midwest?
That question comes up a lot during those months.
Every winter. And then, like, now we're like, this is why we live in the Midwest. It's so beautiful. It's yeah. like 60. Mm-hmm.
Well, finally, it's almost the end of April.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of snowfalls here.
In April.
That's really discouraging when that happens.
It really is. this was the second coldest April that's been on record in this area. The only time it was colder in April was in the, like, 1890, I think. I looked that up.
Nice.
Yeah, little trivia fact.
Although everybody was miserable in 1890, I think, right?
Yeah.
The olden days.
I mean...
They're like, it's going to be a really long time before we even get Wi-Fi. I think that's what they
yeah,
were
that's
really
exactly.
upset about.
That's exactly. Do you think they're going to say that about us in, like... 70 years.
That we're miserable?
Yeah.
Probably.
And I like that I said 70 instead of like, you know, what, like the 120 some that like 130. Oh, math.
They're going to say.
Math in the morning.
Yeah. Not advised. No, I think that's kind of human nature is to look back at the previous generations and say, man, they must have really been miserable.
I mean, and, you know, I mean, and maybe comparatively,
it's not true.
Well, but like maybe comparatively, like think about what could be figured out to make our lives easier in the next 130 years. Like, I mean, my dream is that it does get to the point where no, people don't have to like spend all day in front of the computer or like in a factory, like that really, you know, humans can make their lives a little bit easier, like can produce art, can like make music, podcasts, things like that. And like that become their like work.
Right.
And that's amazing because well, computers and yeah. AI have taken over all the hard jobs.
Now you're getting into basic income.
Which I'm a fan of.
That's probably a different podcast.
Yeah. And I'm like, I feel like between... I'm gonna make so many people mad. Like anything, like basic income, privilege. Like if I'm bringing up anything that like you guys want to talk about off of this podcast, if you live in Batavia, if you know me, which most of these people listening to are, you can like buy me a coffee and a beer and I will totally have that conversation.
Or send a message, send an email.
Yeah.
Facebook. And perhaps we can put it on the schedule for season two.
Yeah.
That's
that'd
what
be
we
really
should
cool.
be telling people.
No,
right?
Yeah.
Give us some ideas to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I have some ideas.
I know you have lots of ideas.
But like, I definitely like, no, yeah. And I think that, yeah, what do you guys want to hear? What do you guys want to, you know more about? Like,
how are we getting in contact with you?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. There is a Rivertown Life on Facebook. It's probably the best. Send a Facebook message.
Okay.
Yeah, at this point. We'll set up an email by season two.
Yeah.
That would be a smart thing to do.
Sure.
I want to talk about moving forward. Like, speaking of, you know, there are a lot of people that did ask me, like, what are you going to do now? And I had, like, bad, vague, very, very, very vague answers. And I still, I mean, they're still quite vague, but I have a little bit more. And I want to, you know, I want to give a shout out to some of the stuff that I'm going to be doing, including this podcast. So that's like basically that's the last thing that I want to cover. And Jaime and I haven't really had this conversation. So Jaime, you are welcome to.
We're having it right now.
Yeah, we're having it live. This might be a place where like you have like some questions of like, well, what, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Well, the thing that I'm thinking right now at this moment is that this episode has been very Bree-centric.
Yes.
But that's not typically how we do the show, because your focus is usually on either a guest or something that's going on in the community.
Yeah.
So perhaps we just need to get that out there to say that it's not just going to be what's going on with Bree show.
No, that's why that this is a bonus episode. This is like, because then I do think
not that,
that
you aren't fascinating.
I know. but I do think like there is like I'm really interested in talking to other people about like what they're doing and like what cool ideas they have, mm-hmm. And what brought them to the place that they're doing. Which I guess like I am in a lot of ways asking myself, and a lot of the questions that I ask other guests are like explain, you know, my journey through like the last year, the way that like I've asked other people to do that. But like, yes, like in season two, it will be like a lot more conversation based. It will be people, and like the way that I see like Rivertown life to me is like I lived in the city of Chicago. My now husband owned a house out here, and we'd come out here and we'd call it our vacation house on the weekends, and we'd like joke about it. And then there was one day that he asked if I would move out here with him, and I was like, sure, yeah, like I'll go live in our vacation house like full time, like that sounds great. And you know, and we talked about Batavia like it was a vacation town, you know, because it's right on the river, it's beautiful, like there's so much nature, you know. We'd go like get tacos and like ice cream, and like there are, you know, like a couple cute shops, things like that. The downtown has a really like small vacation town feel to it. And like a lot of the towns over here have like, you know, Yorkville feels like that. Geneva feels like that. And so what does that life look like? If not that, you know, not that we're always on vacation, but because we're not, obviously, but coming from like the grind of like the city, and how do we live intentionally so we're living our lives in the best way possible? And for us, that, you know, that means being able to like make art and spend time with our like our friends and family, like host things. And I think this idea of like Rivertown life for me as like a lifestyle is very much tied in like how do we live our best lives? Like, and my best life is very different than Jaime's best life, and is very different from Annie's best life, who we, you know, heard on the podcast last season from Hearth and Hammer. But I do recognize other people out here doing something slightly outside of the box and bringing other people with them, like not just like I'm going to, you know, bury my head in the sand and like live my best life. Like often living our best lives include the community around us and include how we interact with the community around us. So that would be a very roundabout artistic statement for season two of Rivertown Life. Mm-hmm. And in the rest of my life right now, I'm looking at this Rivertown as a theme and started a, you know, small tarot business. I'm really passionate about tarot readings, and like using the tarot cards has been a way that I have really opened my life into like looking at as a journey and really getting my brain to like understand like the long game and kind of, I don't know, get myself out of my monkey brain sometime. So I've been teaching some classes and doing some readings here and there. And this summer, I'm going to be reading out of Buddha, Gandhi, and Me, which is in downtown Batavia, and doing like some classes. There's some cool event type stuff that I can't talk about yet, but we've got a retreat in September. Like, there's some cool ways, because like I really want to teach tarot. Like, I love doing readings, but I also love teaching people how to do it for themselves, because I think it's a great personal self-care reflection, like to add to journaling, or, you know, a morning meditation can be really great. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to focus on that this summer. And I have another teaser is something called Rivertown Craft, which is probably the thing that's going to be closest to a Fawn Gifts. I'm not opening a brick and mortar, but I am developing a brand that might be seen somewhere in the Fox Valley area at some point. And you'll have to follow us on Facebook and Instagram or somewhere. Like, there'll be more information about that, but that's just a nice like teaser of
that is a tease.
Yeah. And something that wasn't even a possibility in 2017, but through and not something that I even wanted to do, but through like hibernation and conversations with other people and spending some like creative time alone, some like kind of cool projects have come up. So yeah, I'm excited for the summer.
I am too.
Yeah.
What else? Is that it?
That's it. That's a lot, Jaime. Like,
is that all you got?
That's all I got. That's all I got.
Well, I think that I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that we really appreciate you, and we love that you are going to continue. And of course, there is a bit of sadness with the shop, but that was just one iteration of what you want to do for the community. I, for one, am very glad that you're coming out of hibernation, and I am certainly looking forward to seeing what's next.
Thank you, Jaime. Thank you.
And if there's anything I can do for you, let me know.
You can produce this podcast.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. I can do that.
Cool.
All right. I guess I'll see you in season two.
Season two. Can't wait. Thanks, everybody.
Fox Valley Voice.